I'm Barbara Bray. Welcome to my Rethinking Learning podcast, where I have conversations with inspirational educators, thought leaders, and change agents. Welcome, everyone. And I have a real special person here, Rose Colby. I have been so lucky to actually get to work with Rose. Hi, Rose.
Hey, Barbara.
And before we start, I want to tell everyone about you. I just am so honored that you're here. So Rose Colby is the author of Competency-Based Education, A New Architecture for K-12 Schooling. It's a new book, and I really highly, highly recommend it. She also co-authored Off the Clock with Fred Bramante, so I have both those books. She's a competency-based learning and assessment specialist and serves as a national advisor and contributor to competencyworks.org. Rose is a fellow of Two Revolutions, where she coaches schools and districts nationally in developing prototypes for the future of learning and competency education. And like I said, I'm so fortunate to have known Rose for, I don't know how many years now, Rose.
Oh. Probably about 8 years anyway.
About 8 years, yeah. And then we presented at iNicoll in October together, and she was a keynote, and I was so excited. Welcome, Rose.
Thank you, Barbara. It's an honor to speak with you today.
Oh, this is just, it's so nice. And I'd love to have you just share a little bit about you, your family, where you live.
Sure. Yeah. Well, the Colby family was actually in its own transition last year. We have two daughters who are married, and we have three little grands, and they work in New York City. And so we were living in New Hampshire. I've lived in New Hampshire all my life, and we wanted to be closer to our kids. So last year we made a move to Western Connecticut on the New York border. So we get a chance to see our family on a regular basis, which has been a wonderful change for us in our lives. But prior to that time, I lived in New Hampshire, as I said. I didn't come through the usual pathway for teacher preparation. I was a high school biology and chemistry teacher, and I came from industry and went into education. Didn't realize I was doing some innovative things in the classroom. I was just teaching the way I thought science should be taught at the high school level. So I think I had kind of a more of a project-based learning orientation to my own teaching as a teacher long before it was popular, or maybe it was when we were doing projects the way projects should have been done. I'm not quite sure. I think things do come back around every once in a while. But I went from being a teacher at the high school level to a science department head to an assistant principal at a high school. And then became associate principal at a middle school that I soon became principal of. So I was principal for 17 years at Mountain View Middle School in New Hampshire. And at the time, we were proud to say we were an award-winning school. We were school of the year, school of excellence twice while I was principal. And then I became involved in 2002 in Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation project where I was able to work with superintendents and principals across the state working on student-centered learning projects. This was back in 2002. So I think at that point in time, I realized that I wanted to do something more in education than retire at the end of it. I had a yearning to do more work that was more on the innovation side of education. So I retired from my principalship in 2006, and it was just at the point in time when the new standards were, minimum standards for school approval in New Hampshire came into play, where we made the move as the first state in the nation to no longer grant credit at the high school level for seat time. So we no longer had the Carnegie unit, and it was based on students demonstrating mastery of competencies. It was new territory. People didn't know what competencies were. Everyone kind of took what they did and said it was a competency. They didn't really get under the skin of it and figure out how different is that from traditional learning. So I was fortunate in working in the science field. They needed work in science competencies at the statewide level. So I began the work with a couple of associates and developed the competencies that when the Department of Education, namely Paul Leather and Mary Ann Graffaire at the time, looked at the work and they said, we need this in all of our content areas. Will you come and be our competency education specialist? And so I did that for 10 years, worked with the state and some school districts who said, okay, we're developing competencies at the high school level. Doesn't make sense to start them in at this, at high school. We want to go K through 12 in our development. And so I worked privately as a consultant with them and then continued to work as the outreach person for the Department of Ed in developing competencies and the work that goes into a competency-based system statewide. Meeting with districts. And then over the last 4 years, the New Hampshire PACE developed.
I want to just jump in here because okay. you know, a lot of people don't really understand competencies around the country.
No, they don't.
So what I want to do before you start getting really deep into some of the work you do is I kind of want to just get a baseline for some of the audience because they don't know what PACE is. They don't know
right.
what a lot of things
right.
are.
Right. So I think there's I think something that comes up for me all the time in this work is that there's an assumption or a just quick reach to say, well, we're standards based, so we have our competencies. And there is a difference between standards and competencies. And that is the big evolution, if you will. Okay. So I think of competencies as the way the rest of the world thinks of them. Okay. So they're standards of performance, not just standards. So in education, we've done the standards really well. We've identified what it is that kids need to know and be able to do. We've been doing it for 150 years. All right. All good teachers teaching any content area know what the kids need to know in that content area. So I always say I'm very standards agnostic. I think they're great guidelines, but they're basically whatever standards you look at, they're basically have identified things pretty much the same way, right? Mm-hmm. So the competency piece goes further, okay? It isn't what you know, it's how can you apply what you know that's a competency. So if you think of, you know, generally out in the world, I like to use the medical profession because it's usually the one that everybody is associated with. You don't think about where a doctor got his degree. You look at the certificate on the wall, but when they've passed their boards, it means they've passed standards of performance that across any school that grants that degree, let's say in surgery, everybody has met that standard of performance and it's identified. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now they have to do it in different ways in different professions. But as a field or a profession, they've said not only this is what you need to know, but this is how you have to perform on it to be competent.
So they can I just, you know, how some schools, because I work with different districts and they talk about mastery. So there's confusion with teachers. They think, well, mastery of the standards, which is the content, where a lot of times the competency is the skill.
Right. So, okay. So if you go back to the standards movement, right, under No Child Left Behind, we identified the standards. We teach those standards and the kids will have met the standards and they will not be left behind. They'll all know what they need to know. But the tests, the state assessment tests that measure those standards are usually at a higher depth of knowledge level that requires kids to problem solve and think through what they've learned to answer these high level mm-hmm. questions. And that's where the gap has happened.
Well, it's okay.
We found out after 15 years, kids can't meet that standard.
Well, so, it's the critical thinking skills that I think was missing.
Exactly.
And they don't even know. I mean, the problem I find is that they're fed information, they take that information, and I hate to say regurgitate it, but they tend to just because of the standard, you know, the standardized tests. So the whole thing about competency-based is that you're trying to get them to think in a different level. I'm just saying what you're saying.
So that's that issue. That is that difference between a standard and a competency. A competency mm-hmm. requires for the student to learn what they need to learn. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that can be different for different kids based on their prior knowledge, where they went. You know, we have kids who are involved in different kind of curriculum. You have I call it the untaught curriculum, curriculum that kids are exposed to, but they've never learned. They've been taught it, but they haven't learned it.
Well, they know how to do school.
Or they know how to do school.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But when it, you have to call on that in a particular task, that takes on a different instructional piece. Cause now the teacher has to figure out who knows these prerequisite skills to do this. Or if it's something new, how does the teacher know that they know it well enough to now apply it? Right. So there's a different orientation in the mm-hmm. instructional model to competencies, but the real evidence and the grading, so the assessment evidence, the learning targets, the grading targets are in that task that you're asking the kids to apply their learning on.
And that's so different for teachers. I mean, this is where one of the things that I look at with competency works and some of the other, even iNicole, a lot of people are looking at how are we moving from standard-based to competency-based?
Yeah.
And that, to me, is one of the things, maybe this is where we talk about PACE, too.
Right. Hold off on PACE for just a minute. I think there's an important thing. I think what I've in doing those readings as you've done, I think I'm and at some of the briefs that have come out of Competency Works and iNicole, it's really started to point to the notion of personalized learning, which you're our national expert on that, and competency based. Okay. I think personalized is a step into it. Okay, we need mm-hmm. to get to personalized learning. Okay, I would say you need to get to personalized standards-based learning. If you're only doing standards-based now, maybe your introduction into that evolution towards competency-based, which is a higher standard of performance, might be personalized because you have to engage the learner so that they own their learning, okay, and that they actually have agency in being able to say, I can show you that I can do that, and this is how I'm thinking about showing you how I'm going to do that. And now the teacher's role is more a coach, right? Mm-hmm. Moving the kid in the right direction. And then from the competency end, creating those standards of performance, okay, around how the student is engaging personally in their learning. So I think they go together. Yeah. I think kids and parents understand the personalized learning more than they understand competency-based.
But one of the things that you and I did when we did our presentation is we tried to marry the two, but it still is hard for teachers to see how they can bring about and move to competency based. It's almost like we need to bring in the introduction of what competency is, talk about personalized learning so they own and drive it, and
right.
then how now can they take on this competency? Because they're going to be assessing their own learning.
That's right. That's right. And I think where I've seen the deepest educator work, when the teachers actually do this work, okay, and we really have to empower our teachers to make decisions around these things, mm-hmm. we really have to ask them, what does proficiency look like when they apply it? You know, and we use a lot, I use a lot of the research from Karen Hess, who, by the way, is coming out with a new book in March. And I think that should be on everybody's bookshelf. I've just talked to Karen about it, and I've got my pre-order in on that book because I'm going to just swallow that. And the nice thing about that, and it's really going to be important work because it's based on a workshop model. So this is where you can move from standards to competencies. All right. Knowing the demand of depth of knowledge and its application in designing learning opportunities for kids and assessing them.
So your book that would be a great precursor to their
book. I could only do a chapter on mm-hmm. that part, that dimension of the work. Mm-hmm. And it really needs a book, right? It needs a good way for teachers to take it into their professional learning communities, to take the work that they're doing, okay, which is good work. Right.
Well,
now we have to move it. You don't have to recreate it. You don't have to do it all over again. You just have to evolve it, you know, and move it into this more demanding. Mm-hmm. I tend to stay away from the word rigor because it's misunderstood by different audiences. Educators have a different definition for it than parents do.
Well, rigor is also related to content and it's standards and demonstrating that you know the mastery of the standards, but they're not talking about real life skills.
Right. Right. And also, I think in the competency piece, and this is where you merge, this is what the nexus of the personalized learning and the competency, mm-hmm. where you are creating those performance criteria around what you're asking kids to do. But I think the important thing is that we use real world scenarios for it.
Definitely.
Okay. Well, and that's where you get the kid connection, right? Because you can create that.
Just like you did when you first started with projects. I was into project-based learning 20-some years ago. And like you said, it comes around again because it can demonstrate if it's around, and a lot of times they're called passion projects.
Exactly. Yep.
Can we just mention your book and talk about
it? Sure.
I just love it. I read it through. I'm all marked up. It's called A New Architecture for K-12 Schooling.
Right.
It's really great the way you pulled it together.
Thank you. Thank you. I think, I've worked with so many people who, would come to New Hampshire and want to see what competency education looks like. Mm-hmm. And I keep telling them this is, I used to call it the shopping tour, because that's what they wanted to do. They would want to see a school, go shopping and say, yeah, I like that. And then, and then want to do it in their own school. What they don't realize is the infrastructure is different. Right. Mm-hmm. So this isn't a one size fits all model. And so how do you create, in the back of my mind, I kept saying, and I kept learning from the work, doing this work. I mean, maybe 5 years from now, it's competency education is going to look different. I hope so. I hope we can write an edition number two on what it's turned into. Right. Because we're at the, more than the beginning stage in this work, that's for sure. But I just felt that we all needed some kind of a frame to work under. And the more I did this work, the more I realized that the conventional structure of curriculum, which is very standards-based, K through 8 anyways, not so much at the high school level, those aren't the competencies. So that's a different part of the framing structure, right? So then you look into the assessment piece and you say, well, it isn't really the assessment of standards-based era because we're not assessing the standards. We're assessing the performance. So now it's performance assessment that we have to talk about as the framing structure. And then getting into the grading pieces, mm-hmm. you can't use traditional grading. And that could be a whole other separate discussion that we can have, right? But traditional grading is subjective. In many cases, it's unfair. There's serious equity issues around traditional grading structures.
Well, every teacher does something different, and A means something different.
And yet, would you want your surgeon to have that kind of grading on their work? You wouldn't know if they're competent or not, right? So we as an industry have to create validity and reliability in the evidence, what we're communicating about student learning. So we need a new framework for grading that's K-12, not school-based. Not mm-hmm. elementary, middle, or high school based, but it articulates as the kid moves through K-12 within a system.
I need to ask you then, because a lot of the problems with the K-12, it's based on especially when you get to high school, what about when I want to go to the university? I think it's K-20. I'm concerned that the universities aren't involved. So they understand that, even AP, maybe there isn't AP, maybe everything is AP.
Yeah. Those are serious questions.
Yeah.
I think that parents oftentimes are the ones that are most concerned about grading, changing grading systems. Mm-hmm. And they overlook how the current grading system doesn't work in their child's favor on admissions. But we've done the work with colleges and universities, and they are very happy to receive competency-based transcripts because it tells them more information than traditional transcripts do. And it actually communicates more about what we call those personal success skills that mm-hmm. are part of competency education, because those are the ones that are part of college and career readiness.
So I want to stop you and talk about the profile of a graduate. This is what we did at iNicole, and that just even having teachers think about what does this mean now for a graduate?
Right. I think, in the end, all right, I always sum it up with just a very visual something visual for people to think about. Think about the kid walking across the stage to get the handshake at graduation. Okay. We have prepared that student, that young adult, for this point in their lives. We have to be sure that in a competency-based world, same way with all our other professions, they don't get the handshake until they've demonstrated with performance criteria that they're ready for the next phase of their lives. Hmm. And that's why competency education isn't time-based. You get that diploma when you've shown, when you have the evidence that says, here's all of my discipline area content, my academics are in line, but here are all the other personal success skills that I need to be successful whether I go to college or whether I go to the workplace.
Oh, I would love this. Wouldn't right? this be amazing for
so,
all of our children?
So in a yeah. true competency education system, we're mm-hmm. looking at both of those, not mm-hmm. just the academics. That's where we leave standards-based in the dust. Standards-based has only been about academics.
Well, one other thing, you know, because of technology and all the resources, right now, kids are so tied to their phone and tied to what, you know, they can find the content if they are given the right tools. So maybe we need to let go, but it's really hard for teachers.
It is. You know. It is. And I think we have to learn how to use blended learning well. Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll ever be, and even in pure online learning, you're always connected to a teacher. In fact, we have some kids who take in New Hampshire, we have an online high school called VLAX, and it's known nationally. Some kids will say they have a better relationship with their VLAX teacher than they do with their traditional teacher. They're in classrooms with 30 or 35 kids. They're talking on the phone and video conferencing with their teacher once a week in an online setting. And they actually feel closer in the learning setting. And that's a really important relationship. All right.
But that's new for so many teachers.
It is. And how do you, you know, in face-to-face learning, how do you now bring in blended learning so that you can get, you can say, Barbara, I'm noticing you're really weak in this. I want you to, you know, go to your playlist and I want you to be working on this and I'll check it to be sure. You need to be ready to be able to apply that. So you have to have a stronger skill set with this.
Well, you know what I like, Rose, is that, I was just at a conference in Ohio, a blended personalized learning. They should have put blended personalized learning competency based. We should have had it all together. Yeah. People aren't ready yet. And so, and because teacher ed is still traditional in many, if we could all work together on this, I'd love to see how they could have some examples. So maybe Karen's book will show some of those. Is that
yeah,
right?
I think so. And also I think there's some good work going on at MIT now. They received a huge grant around teacher preparation and they've really, I think are probably within the next 5 years going to have a great impact on teacher preparation.
Well, I actually heard about some of that and I'm really excited. I'd like to be able to share that story on how they're doing it because it's something around challenges instead of,
So,
wouldn't that be wonderful if we could look at the MIT model and actually kind of replicate that all the way down? So we're doing challenges, and because challenge-based education is so amazing, it's around curiosity.
Yeah. I think the other piece too that's important to note. And I don't know if educators themselves aren't aware, the K-12 educators aren't aware, but we have a large, large network of colleges and university who are currently now moving towards competency education.
So we should probably list those somewhere and so people could look at them. Yeah, that would be great.
It's actually a network. It's called the CBEN, C-BEN network of colleges and universities. And in reality, they're going to competency-based education sometimes for different reasons than K-12. It's mainly because the traditional 4-year pathway leading to a bachelor's degree isn't working for kids. Mm-hmm, the actual graduation rate nationally and the numbers are pretty low. I know for our state it's 40% that they actually are able to complete a bachelor's program in 4 years. The numbers don't go up much further for fifth and sixth year, by the way. And in other states it's far lower. We push to get kids into college, but you know, I keep thinking, wow, 40% graduation rate, you know?
It's a lot of money wasted.
And a lot of private colleges and universities are collapsing on itself. A lot of state university systems are are bending under the weight of state retirement systems for faculty. You're seeing a big move towards use of adjuncts instead of full faculty for that reason. There's a lot of stirring going on at the university level around how they really structure themselves. Mm. And really, most of them are going to be moving towards a competency-based model that are graduation competencies. Southern New Hampshire University, who's kind of the poster child for university work in their College for America, has 120 competencies for their associate's degree. And you can do that for the cost of $5,000.
Wow.
Because you can do it in your own time. The longer it takes you to do the program, the more it's going to cost you. Mm-hmm. But again, time is inconsequential. Can you do it? Can you show that you can meet these competencies with evidence? Okay. Mm-hmm. Not from, courses that you have to meet for so many hours, but from life experience, from projects that you're doing, from seminars that you're doing, from courses that you're taking. All of those things together lead toward exit proficiencies. Wow. For graduation. So we do have a good number of colleges who have been threatened with closure. Their models aren't working for keeping kids for 4 years. They want to reduce the cost of that degree as well as the time that it takes to get it.
So it seems like education K-20 is, pre-K-20 is changing everywhere, and this is going to be the way to do it. And so I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that you're a fellow at Two Revolutions.
Yes.
Is that what you're doing? You're going around and coaching?
Well, yeah, it depends. With Two Revolutions, work in Loudoun County, I was involved with that work. Generally with Two Revolutions, I've had a long-term association with them because they came in to do the work in New Hampshire with the Department of Ed. And when through several state projects that Two Revolutions is involved in, either working with leadership teams, the central office teams, or teacher work also, they'll ask me to come into particular projects and I do that. And in addition, I have a number of folks that I've been doing this work with for a number of years that I stay close to, in my work.
Well, Rose, what's so fun is that I've been doing this work as long as you, but
yeah,
it's like, we're never going to stop. You're so passionate about it. And now it's like, it's in the horizon when you look at this is the time we have to do these. We have to make these changes. So
I just wish that we had done this. Like, I wish No Child Left Behind had never happened.
Oh gosh.
Where would we be now? Because all of the work on performance assessment was actually started in the 80s and 90s. There was a national network of work, and this, Linda Darling Hammond's work out at Scope in Stanford, and Scale, and all of that was running like crazy. That's where we started our work in New Hampshire, and that's why we were able to see it, become part of an accountability system for our state. And so it became important.
I was like you. I was doing all that type of work. I was doing project-based, and everything was, I thought it was competency-based because we were talking about skills. And when No Child Left Behind came in, I was really vocal on how awful it was.
Yeah.
So what are next steps for you? Are you going to be changing anything other than, are you going to write any more books? Or?
Well, what's been interesting, just since October, I've had a number of school districts that have contacted me for book studies.
Oh, cool.
They we'd like you to come to us. And I'd like, let's start with the book study. Because sometimes if you go and do, speak to a large group, they don't have the grounding to grow, And I said, I want to build capacity in districts, right? So not that my book has got all the answers. I want it to be a launching point for people to do a lot of reading and try things. And with Two Revolutions, it's a design firm. So we design new systems, right? You want people to try things, to prototype things, try it out. How's it working? Oh, that doesn't work. Well, next time you do it, try this, So that's the mindset. It isn't, this is what it looks like, now go do it. It's try this, try this, try this. Well, there's a lot of different things to try in
like
the
you
model.
Said, yeah, because you said every school, every district, even every teacher, they're all unique, and the infrastructure is different. So they really need to do this on their own.
Right.
Well, I could talk to you all day, but I only have so much time. But this was amazing. You brought in it. We didn't talk about pace, though. I just realized.
Well, I think just for most folks, for most educators, I think probably administrators kind of cue into the accountability pieces a little bit more keenly because they're usually mm-hmm. held to the fire around a lot of the preparation work for accountability systems. But under the new ESSA legislation, mm-hmm. States have the ability to file for some innovations in terms of accountability systems that have assessment systems more local. And that is okay. the system that New Hampshire received the one and only pilot to do the work. I think there may be a couple of others in the works right now, but we had these districts that were K through 12 competency based, all their competencies identified at each grade level. And we've had a 3-year training program for teachers to engage in around performance assessment. And so we believe that no test on one day is the measure of a student's learning, and that the people who should be in the position to decide whether a student is proficient or not over the course of their learning is their teacher. And wow. so we built an assessment yeah. system around that. That's
based on
grading systems. Their grading mm-hmm. systems are competency-based, so we can take evidence from grading systems. We can take evidence from these highly refined performance tasks that are given when the kid is doing the learning. They aren't artificially imposed on a date and time. So if we're both teachers at the same grade level and your kids are ready to do their PACE task in January and mine are ready to do it in March, it's okay because it's embedded in the local curriculum.
Right? Oh,
so we put all those together and said, this is our theory of action. And at the time it was Arne Duncan as Secretary of Education, and Smarter Balance and Park was just coming out, and they allowed us to go ahead and do it. And we've actually been able to show that our kids do better on the national tests and state tests than their peers.
So, oh, I love this.
Yeah.
We're going to put a blog post.
Okay.
And with links. And I think people will be really interested in that, and definitely to your books and this book, especially.
Yeah.
And, so I'm just, like I said, I wish I could talk to you all day. You know that, Rose.
I know.
This is why we wanted to work together, because we have some of the similar ideas. But this has been wonderful. You really put a lot in a very short time. I'm so lucky. Thank you.
Thank you.
Much.
Thank you.
This has been wonderful. Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Rose Colby about competency-based education. Look for a complimentary blog post about Rose with resources and links. Please subscribe to the podcast and leave a review on iTunes and tweet out the post with the hashtag Rethink_learning. And you can also subscribe to my website, barbarabray.net, to receive announcements and updates so you don't miss any of the conversations.